Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Today I am joined by our senior writer, host of the Low Post podcast, who I terrified just a few minutes ago. We'll get into that later. And the 11-time All-Star, two-time champ, 2021 Hall of Fame honoree, Chris Bosh,
joining
the show. Chris, I'm just going to call you that. That's how I'm going to address you, just in the middle of a conversation. We'll be having lunch, and I'll just be like, Hall of Famer Chris Bosh, would you like some ketchup? Like that. That's how I'm going to do it from now on.
No complaints.
We're going to preview the games tonight later in the show. But first, let's talk about last night. Chris Paul and the Suns beat the Nuggets by 25 points last night. Remember, Chris was battling shoulder issues in the first round against the Lakers. The man looked very healthy last night. That leads us to today's magic moment, brought to you by Walt Disney World Resort. CP3, 17 points, 15 assists. And oh, by the way, no turnovers last night. He has three career playoff games of at least 15 points and 15 assists with no turnovers. All other players in the NBA, everybody else, only has four such games total together. Individual turnovers retract since 1978. So this is very good. Chris Bosh, Hall of Famer Chris Bosh, what is CP showing you this postseason?
Well, I mean, he's a winner. He's always been a winner. If you look at his track record, every team that he has went to has had some success, and he gets the nod because it's very extremely difficult to win a championship. But he's showing us, he's showing all of us how good they can be and that they want to win, that they want to win a championship, that this is what they're in here to do. This is what their mind frame is. The time is now, and he's playing like it. I mean, he's playing phenomenally. They move the ball as a team phenomenally well. They have great size. They have balance. Their bench scoring is very good. I think they can make a run at a championship.
So not just happy to be here, Zach Lowe.
They're not, the Suns are not just happy to be here. I mean, Chris Paul, we've said it before on the show.
Yes.
If you want to win basketball games,
get Chris Paul on your team.
It's infallible.
Yep.
So what he's showing, he's still the point guard. His health, his shoulder looks better and better every game. He showed in game one he can do that thing where he feels out the game for three quarters, and when you need him to score in the fourth quarter, he can get you some buckets. And he's playing remarkably well, and in 20 years, people are going to be sifting through old trades and be like, this must be a typo that the Thunder got two first-round picks to swap Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. How does that make sense? He's an all-time great player, and the Suns are proving they are not to be trifled with by anyone.
Yeah, and look, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think there's so many ways Chris Paul is a fantastic example for the younger guys in the league and really, frankly, for a lot of people in their life situations. Not everything is going to go the exact way you thought it was going to go, the way you might want it to go. He never was anything but professional with the Thunder. Never complained, never held out, never said, you better deal me. Walked into that team, was great with the younger guys, and proved to everyone, hey, you might think that I'm done. I am not finished, and I'm going to do the work to show you. And he got himself in this situation and then has done the work since then. So I think some guys sometimes in the middle of their careers, and this is different because Chris is obviously a future Hall of Famer, it doesn't apply to everyone, but you can end up in a little bit of no man's land with the team where, say, this isn't quite the right fit for you or the right situation for you. And he is demonstrating once again to the younger guys in the league, hey, you can keep putting in the time and the work and get where you want to go. It's very, very impressive. And looking at the West bracket, the Suns are up 2-0 on the Nuggets. They have now won five games in a row this postseason. So as we look at the field here, Hall of Famer Chris Bosh just said, hey, I can see them getting to the finals. What do you see?
Why couldn't they get to the finals? They're up 2-0 on the Nuggets. The Nuggets look absolutely gassed. That's it. You know, they're going home. At least they have that going for them. But last night was not a competitive game. Mike Conley's injured. We'll see what happens in that series. That series is in its early stages. Both of those teams, Utah and LA, are really, really good. But you just look at the Suns now. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? If Chris Paul's going to play like this, Devin Booker's a superstar. Ayton has been one of the best stories of the entire playoffs, playing up into his career best levels. And like, they're deep. They're well coached. Monty Williams has done an absolutely amazing job. I voted for him for Coach of the Year. Why not?
Yeah. Chris?
I mean, Zach said it all right there. I mean, And, you know, you always want to see the intensity. You mm-hmm. want to see the hunger during this time of year. Them winning the games that they needed to win, getting those road wins against the Lakers, I think those are signs of a really good team. You have to prove that you're serious during this time of year, right? So, you know, taking care of business on your home court, going up 2-0. Not only going up 2-0, but dominating in those games, I think it shows how hungry they are, how motivated they are. And like Zach said, their coaching staff is second to none. Monty Williams has done a phenomenal job this year. And I was saying earlier as well, I remember when as soon as Chris Paul signed, him and Book were in there
Great.
Getting up shots in the same night, right? So this has been something coming. It's been brewing for a long time. I kind of compare it to when Tom Brady was out there running routes or passing routes to his guys with the Buccaneers. You know, we will see that work pay off. So it's starting to come to fruition for them now.
Chris, what do you know and have seen in situations in your NBA career where you have a team where the team itself, the franchise, has not been in the playoffs at all in any way? Oh, look, here is that film Chris is talking about, by
look
the way.
At that.
So awesome. Franchise not been in the playoffs in a decade. You have a bunch of guys, key guys on this team, starters, DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker. This is their first playoff experience. So normally when that happens, we don't see guys like that advance to the NBA finals. But of course, they have Chris Paul. They have an experienced coach. There are other voices on that team. What do you think, or what have you seen in your past about younger guys who are able to catch up that quickly, kind of ahead of schedule?
I mean, I think that's where Monty Williams and his leadership comes in. I was watching a couple of their games, and he would always say, hey, this is the playoffs. This is how it is, right, guys? He has prepared them. They have prepared themselves mentally to be in this situation. And you can really tell that these are things that they talk about. We have to show toughness. We will be challenged. We definitely have to put ourselves in a place to where we can win a championship. And the part I love about that clip is I want people to see that clip. As long as this team is still playing, for anybody that wants to be successful out there, watch that clip.
Yep.
That was the same day he joined the team. And I think he was in LA or something like
yeah.
that. They joined together in Phoenix and started getting shots up. And that's when I was like, okay, these guys are serious. So we'll see what happens this year.
Yeah, here's my last Chris Paul stat before we move on to the Nuggets side of thing. How about this for company? Only Chris Paul, Oscar Robertson, and Isaiah Thomas, you know, Zeke, that Isaiah Thomas, have averaged 20 points per game and 8 playoffs per game in the playoffs. That's it. That is the club. That is a pretty damn good list, and it is not surprising to see Chris Paul's name on there. All right, let's go to the Nuggets side of things. Head coach Michael Malone said, remember he said his team had a, quote, soft mentality after game one? Well, after game two, he was just as critical of his team. Take a listen.
I just told our players it's embarrassing that a guy that hasn't been able to play for 7 weeks was out there leaving it all on the line, and I don't think anybody else did. This was an embarrassing performance from myself all the way through the last player. You know, we're walking out of here with our heads held down, rightfully so. And there's a reason that their crowd is yelling Suns in four and they're calling for a sweep, because if we play like this back in Denver, this is going to be a really quick series. You could say that pretty much for the Phoenix Suns roster. They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight. Which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with 5 guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
That's a lot. And again, as we point out, the second game in a row, he has really just left it all out there about his team and talking now about changing lineups. Chris, what do you make of that?
Well, they're in a tight spot. Sometimes a coach's job is to motivate his or her players. What you don't want in this instance, and we'll see how they respond, you don't want Denver, you don't want Mike to lose his team. Mike
right.
doesn't want to lose his team. That's what I'm trying to say. Because once that happens, it makes it tougher. And I mean, the fact that he's just saying, I want to put 5 guys together, I mean, they've got to do some soul searching right now. Again, they're going home. Maybe they'll feel better and get that renewed sense of confidence. But he's definitely challenging them right now. I hope that he knows his guys, and it's a big game. I mean, that's what the playoffs are about. Down 2-0, you probably didn't think you'd be down 2-0, and you just got beat really bad in both of those games. So we'll see how they respond. This is all about their response and how they'll handle it as players.
Yeah, the Nuggets have always responded to Michael Malone. Every comment he's made, every time he's pushed him, he's done a great job. But Chris is right that I may not be able to find five guys, or I got to find five. That was a jaw-dropper, and there is nowhere to go from soft and quit. There is no other verbal negative comment to be made. And I will say there was a moment in the third quarter, I think, where Facundo Campazzo was rotating to yet another wide open Phoenix corner three, and you could see him as he was halfway through his rotation put his head down and and that, I guess, that could be construed as like a team that was broken, but you know what, the Suns broke them,
right?
That is the Suns generating one wide open three after another, and the Nuggets just saying we're out of answers. And Jokic looks gassed, and he's had to carry a huge load without Jamal Murray. Michael Porter Jr. is hurt. But if they quit, if they've been playing quote-unquote soft, it's because Phoenix has taken it to them, and they are out of answers right now, and they got to find some.
And look, we've had a great celebration of Nikola Jokic in the past couple days, the MVP being announced, and he has earned every minute of it. But earning that, doing that work, especially after Jamal Murray got hurt, it's exhausting. I mean, the reason why it was an accomplishment to watch him do what he did was because it is hard.
Yep.
And now we may be seeing the effect. But again, they can now get two at home. So we'll see what they can do. And he's MVP for a reason. It's what makes the playoffs so fun. The Utah Jazz confirming that Mike Conley is out for game two, still battling hamstring issues. We'll talk more about this game soon. But, Zach, what changes do the Jazz need to make with Conley still out? I mean, obviously they won game one, but now this feels like it's settling into a longer situation.
Yeah, they know how to play without Mike Conley. They know exactly what their rotation is without Mike Conley, so they know how to do that. The trouble is it's just another guy that can beat switches one-on-one and organize their offense. But when Donovan Mitchell scores 45 points, you don't miss that guy very much.
But that's a big burden, Chris, right, on Donovan?
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can tell that he's taking a charge, and he has to do those things until his guy gets back and he can be close to 100% as possible.
Yeah, and like we talked about it yesterday, the kid's 24 years old and playing like a 34-year-old vet in terms of his savviness and poise. So impressive. Speaking of change, let's count them up and discuss the head coaching vacancies in the NBA right now. There are four of them: Portland, Boston, Orlando, and Indiana. Now, a few hot names on the market include Chauncey Billups, former Blazers coach Terry Stotts. Zach, in your opinion, which is the best vacancy out there right now? If you had your pick of these jobs, who would you choose?
I think it's got to be Boston. You have the 23-year-old superstar in Jason Tatum. Dame is 30 in Portland, going on 31, and the future feels a little rickety there. So it's got to be Boston. You also have Jaylen Brown. Some players will go there, maybe not the A-plus stars, but they've gotten some really good players there. If you want runway, it's Orlando, because you'll have time. You're in a deep rebuild. But to win now and to win later, I think it's got to be Boston.
What do you got, Chris?
Yeah, I definitely agree with them. You know, they have the talent, the flexibility, the draft picks, the cap space. They're going to be able to make a run for extended years. You just have to handle that pressure. But I would say this. I want to challenge each organization, and I want to challenge the NBA as well. We have good young black coaches out there. We have Sam Cassell, Jason Kidd, amongst a plethora of young black men out there that have been in the game for a very long time. Chauncey Billups, another one. I would very much so like to see a high percentage of black men get hired this year. We've seen Steve Nash go straight to the top. We've seen Brad Stevens go from being a college coach to president of an organization, rightfully so. I'm sure those are brilliant guys, but I want to see black men getting a chance to be able to coach a team and have the shot and leading a team in the NBA.
Amen. And I think a lot of current players like the idea of not just having someone who looks like them and that they feel that they can relate to, but someone who's had playing experience. And I think that's a whole separate category of guys, regardless of what they look like, but who maybe need to get a little bit more of a shot, too. And I know that Damian Lillard wanted Jason Kidd initially. He went on the record with that. That's not going to happen. But again, the idea, someone they can relate to. Dame especially, I think, feels like he wants someone who knows what it's like to have been out there. I'd also also like to say, Chris, I'm going to add to what you just said and say, let's give some of the women on these benches a shot. And whether it's actually for the job or just the interview process so that they can go through, get the experience doing it. So when it is their turn and they've had enough coaching experience, they can wow them in an interview situation too. All of that stuff is important. Those opportunities are important. And we talked about it a little bit when Minnesota made a coaching change in the middle of the year. That was nothing against Chris, right? That had nothing to do with who they actually picked. It just had to do with the process and the idea of, hey, this process needs to be more inclusive. It just does, because until you get in a room with someone, they may not be the person who looks like the owner or who looks like the general manager. They may knock your socks off. They might not be your friend from 20 years back, but they might knock your socks off. So the idea that some of the people who haven't gotten a shot to just even be in the conversation, that needs to change. And I hope, Chris, you're to your point, that that changes in a way that we can all see coming up soon. All right, coming up on The Jump, the Bucks facing a daunting 2-0 hole in their series versus the Nets. What adjustments can they make to get one back in Milwaukee? I've been talking to Zach about this for 2 days. I'm very excited about this segment, so keep it locked. We'll break it down next. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Chris Bosch is along with us, and Zach Lowe right here. Zach, I want to pick your brain here because the Nets have had their way with the Bucks in the first two games of the series. It's just how it is. Milwaukee has been embarrassed. This is just how it is. 39 points. They were 39 points down.
49.
Well, they were 49, but they finished at 39 points.
Oh, good for them.
So, yay! Not what you want. Milwaukee is going to need to make some definite adjustments in Game 3 to get back into the series. So, Zach, please show us a little bit of just sort of from your perspective as an analyst, what you're seeing.
It starts with their offense, which has been terrible in the series, and it starts with just being purposeful. So here's Jrue Holiday as Kyrie Irving, and he calls for a switch for a better defender, Bruce Brown, going into this pick and roll. And one thing that that's done really well, they're dropping way back and saying, Jrue Holiday, you got to either attack us or make pull-up jumpers, and here's another one. You get a bunch of switches going on, and here's Jrue Holiday saying, Nick Claxton's one of the best switch defenders in the entire NBA. If you're going to ever give the ball to Bobby Portis in the paint, it's right now. This is horrible. No one's moving. No one's doing anything. You're not going to. That is a way to lose a basketball game. Chris Middleton on Joe Harris. Joe Harris is a wildly underrated defender. This is not a mismatch. And look at how the Nets load up. So all the passing lanes are gone except that one. And Giannis paint touches are nice, but Giannis floaters aren't winning you the series. Here's another ISO against the Clex. You have Landry Shamet in the corner waiting to be attacked, the weakest link. They just haven't been purposeful enough. They need to do more stuff like this. Back screen for Giannis, mix it up a little bit. Get the Nets to switch into bad matchups, target their bad defenders. No accident that he got a dunk out of that. They're just sort of meandering with no purpose, with no aim. They're ignoring the weakest link on the other team, whereas the Nets are ruthlessly picking on the weakest link on their team. They just need to have more. It's not just the ISOs and the passing, which have been bad. It's the process leading to those ISOs and the lack of passing.
Well, I think, in my opinion, I hate it because I'm sounding like my coaches from back in the day. It starts on the defensive end. To your point, you see them kind of staggering around on offense, not really getting to their things. A huge portion of their offense is getting the Greek Freak out in space to where he can operate, attack the paint, put the other team in foul trouble, and then they start their kick and pass game. That's where I think they're most effective. And if they're not getting stops, if you're not getting stops against the Brooklyn Nets, if KD is scoring 36 points in a game off of 18 shots, you're probably not going to win that game. They're going to have to go back to their basics, back to being, in their identity, and they're going to have to show some toughness and just get stops and play out in the open court, get those open threes, get everybody involved. That's going to be a necessity for them. We'll definitely see how they respond tonight, because sometimes your back has to be against the wall to respond accordingly. So I feel that this is their moment of truth. We'll see how they respond.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a team that had designs on being elite, getting to the NBA Finals, winning an NBA championship. They've been good in their own building. They have a two-time MVP. You have to expect them to punch back tonight. I do have to ask you, Zach, though, is Mike Budenholzer coaching for his job in this series?
I mean, if I had to guess based on what I've heard and what I've read, absolutely. And if particularly if they get rolled, if they just get rolled, if game three looks anything like game two and this is a short series, I do think there's going to have to be changes somewhere in Milwaukee, and that's the most obvious place to look.
And look, the main criticism of him has been he's an excellent coach, but he has not shown the ability to adjust mid-series during the playoffs the way some of the coaches he's been going against have. Now, he did a lot of adjusting during the regular season. We did not see those adjustments in game or even between games, between one and two. And meanwhile, Steve Nash, who is a rookie head coach, I think has done a phenomenal coaching job.
I agree. And we did see, in Bud's defense, we saw those regular season adjustments pay off against Miami. And he did change his starting five for this series. But this is, I think Chris put it right. I don't think it's dramatic to say. This is a moment of truth for the Bucks organization, the Bucks team, the Bucks coaching staff. They have to win this game.
Interesting. Well, the Nets defensively, look, they took a lot of heat during the regular season from people questioning, is their defense going to be there? Can you win a championship with a defense like this? Brooklyn has answered those questions, people. They have held Milwaukee to 44% from the field, 25% from three so far in the series, which is a big deal since Milwaukee was so good from three during the regular season. Quick update here. James Harden, not a surprise, been ruled out for game three, continuing to battle hamstring issues. Zach, what do you think has been the key to the Nets improving their defense so much and stepping up in the playoffs?
I just think the level of communication and talking is elite. They're engaged. They have active hands. They're helping each other. Their rotations are on point. And this is what they did in games one and two against Boston. Mm-hmm. They went out and proved we have a gear we can get to where maybe we're not elite, but we're decent, we're good, and with our offense, decent. We're winning the championship with decent. And then they kind of took their foot off the gas against Boston. Right. Their foot is right back on the gas. And by the way, when they play Bruce Brown and Claxton and KD and Joe Harris together, that's the skeleton of a really good defense. All those guys are really good defenders, and the story of the playoffs or among them has been Kevin Durant has just been otherworldly on both ends of the floor, and his defense has been all NBA level defense. They've been playing really, really good basketball on both ends.
I know, by the way, that the big stars on Brooklyn's team are fun to watch, and there's so many of them, even without James on the floor. But if you're a basketball fan, watch Nick Claxton. He is so much fun to watch play basketball, especially defensively, the way he scampers around. I hope that he gets a little bit more shine during this postseason. And it is interesting to see how a team that the whole season we were like, we all know that they can buckle down when they really want to, has in fact buckled down when they really want to. LeBron James teams have done that for a long time. Now, Chris, I know that defensively, right when you guys got together down in Miami, Pat Riley held that training camp, Eric Spoelstra on a military base, and you guys only did defensive drills for the first couple days. But then as the seasons wore on in Miami, I assume there was that feeling of, hey, we all know how good we are. We can turn it up a notch when it counts, right?
I mean, you know, there's a mode to that, but there's also a mode to bringing it when it's time to bring it. You definitely want to spend a whole season practicing these habits defensively. That's where the Nets are going to have their challenge. But if you have five guys on a string, if you have guys that are motivated, and like you were saying, and Kevin Durant is playing at an all NBA defensive level. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get enough credit as being a two-way player. He's an extremely tough defender. So if he's buying in, if you see your best player, guarding the other best player, and then on top of that, Blake Griffin diving on the floor for loose balls, getting those tough rebounds, put back dunks, those are the things that you would think the other teams would beat them in. So if the Brooklyn Nets are winning those tough categories, those second chance points, rebounding, and like you said, just playing decent defense, they have enough firepower to where they just have to try. If they try, they give themselves a chance.
I love you mentioning Blake, too, by the way. Obviously, he has some stuff to prove personally, not to any of us, but it just seems like to him, right? It seemed important to him that people understand that what happened in Detroit for the past couple seasons was the result of definitely some injury issues and just being on a team where there weren't as many good players around him. And he is able to show now not just the dunks, not just the offense that he's provided them without Harden in there, but defensively. He's going up against Giannis a lot of these possessions, and he has been looking really, really strong. And I know that has meant a lot to him as well. All right. We will see if the Bucks make their stand tonight. We will also be coming up in this show talking about the Sixers. They were able to kind of contain Trae Young in their Game 2 victory, but Trae Young cannot be contained, people. He's shown that this playoffs. So we'll discuss what worked for Philly and what Trae might do to battle back. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Check out more on Bucks Nets and that pivotal Game 3. Pivoting. Maybe people will do pivoting. Kirk Goldsberry outlining 5 things the Bucks must do to get back in. We have you covered from every angle for tonight's game. Stick with us. Joel Embiid scored 39 and 40, respectively, in the first 2 games of the series against the Hawks. Now, Caesars William Hill listing his over-under for points 32.5 for Game 3. Zach, I know you're not a gambler. I don't know how they get to the half a point, but would you take the over or under here for Embiid?
You think I'm taking the under on anything, Joel Embiid? I'm going over, over until I see him score under 30 in this series. Over.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy one. He's a walking bucket. He's big, and he's going to be able to get to the rim and into the paint. So we'll see what happens.
Take the over on everyone this year with the way scoring is up, right?
I feel like I've worked my whole life for this moment, playing the playoffs. It feels good.
Oh, what a finish by Trae Young. Fires one more dagger.
I know where we are. I know what they do when the show is over.
Trae Young with a miraculous shot.
Got real quiet.
I play with excitement. I play with fun. I love it.
Oh, from way downtown.
Oh, man.
Monty doing something right. Just got to let my play do the talking.
I keep that music going for the whole rest of the show. Trae Young has been awesome this postseason, including Game 1 against the Sixers, but in Game 2, Sixers were able to contain him, 21 points, 38% from the field, including 1-for-7 from three-point range. Now, I personally do not expect to see 1-for-7 again next to Trae's name, but Chris, what did work for the Sixers defending him in Game 2?
I mean, it was all about Ben Simmons taking the challenge. You know, he's arguably one of the top defenders in the league. Definitely, I'm sure he got many votes for Defensive Player of the Year.
Absolutely.
He has that kind of talent on that end. And when he takes that challenge, Philly is a better team. So him being able to put that length on Trae, take up that airspace, run him off that three. I think he did a phenomenal job in Game 2, just getting in his airspace. That's the toughest thing. Because we've seen when Trae Young gets airspace, good luck to you. So he's going to have to find out how to really get to a different game. His players are going to have to make open shots, his teammates. And we can expect that he's not really going to play like that the whole time. Nate McMillan is going to find out a way to shake him free. So I'm assuming that there will be a lot of energy in Atlanta. They'll be ready to play. They'll be super juiced and ready to go.
Trae Young is a genius. He's a genius at creating space with little hesitation moves and pauses, and he knows that people are afraid to foul him, and so when he pauses, people take a step back. The effect of that size was on him with Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle was those windows are smaller and they close faster. And you could see even when Trae Young was able to open a little window behind him and a little window in front of him, he felt it. He heard it. Those guys are coming fast. I think he'll be more prepared just sort of having felt it for one game when Philly surely puts these guys on him again. But it's going to be a really fun sort of chess match, cat and mouse game the whole series between Philly's just giant. I mean, imagine you run a pick and roll and you have Ben Simmons behind you and Joel Embiid in front of you. I mean, what are you supposed to do? That's terrifying. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how Trae and his teammates navigate that the rest of the series.
I know I've said this before, but I just think that the sum of Trae Young's experiences, the fact that he had a little bit of a period in college where teams started defending him differently and he had to adjust, and then a little bit of a period after he got into the NBA, teams started defending him differently and he had to adjust. At this point, this man feels unflappable to me. He cannot be flapped. And especially with the poise that he has shown, that Atlanta crowd that I think is going to power them through, because we know they will be at the top of their lungs and that building will be packed in Georgia. This is not like the Clippers and before them the Lakers that had to have cardboard cutouts in the seats. So I think that the environment there tomorrow is going to be off the hook, and that I expect Trae Young to make more of an impact. But you are right. Ben Simmons is a problem. That leads us to our top shot of the week, brought to you by Walgreens. Let's take a look. Time winding down the third quarter of Hawks Sixers game two. Shake Milton drilling the buzzer beater from long distance. Milton scored 14 off the bench, was one of the keys to the Sixers winning game two. In fact, if you look at his performance in that game versus in the first six games he played in the playoffs, it's ridiculous. Ben Simmons, though, attempting just three shots, 4 points in game two. Now, Zach, Joel Embiid scored 40 and they won the game. So do you feel good about what you saw from Ben Simmons in game two? Or like some Philly fans, would you like to see Simmons more involved offensively?
I think he's got to be more involved. It's easy to argue he's got the luxury of Joel Embiid scoring 40 and he's got this huge job on defense. Mm-hmm. To get where they want to go, he can't take three shots. And he's got to be more involved. I'll give you a stat. Regular season, 16 pick and rolls per 100 possessions as the ball handler. Playoffs so far, 7.5. This series, 4. Ugh. So they're just not, he's just spending too much time hanging out in the dunker spot doing nothing. And that's fine for now. They can win this series with him doing that. They can't win the championship with him doing it. Here's the easiest way. If he's going to guard Trae Young and they get a stop, he's looking at Trae Young in front of him. That's when he's just got to go into bulldozer mode like he did in the first round against the Wizards guards. Atlanta will try like all hell to get out of that matchup. Sometimes you're not going to be able to. That might be the easiest way to get Ben going a little bit because I think the pendulum has swung too far toward he's just a defensive player and a playmaker and an all-time great playmaker, but they need a little more offense from him. The other thing is, 13 of 40 at the foul line from the playoffs is starting to be a problem.
Yeah, and we've seen hack a Ben, right? What do you think, Chris?
I mean, he's got his challenges to overcome. I mean, they definitely have to get him more involved in offense. I do agree with Zach. It's not about how many shots. It's about the type of shots as well. I don't think we want Ben Simmons out there hanging out at the three-point line and just letting it fly. We definitely want to see him down low, creating those matchup problems and really get into his spots and being involved. Because nowadays in the league, you've got to be able to score 110, 115 points a game just to have a shot. If you're playing the Nets, you're probably going to have to score more. So they definitely have to find a way to get him involved. He does have the luxury of the big fella. I do think that how dynamic he is on defense and really just his leadership and his passing ability, his ability to play the game, they need him out there. He's one of the best players in the league and they do have to find some shots for him. Look for Doc Rivers and his staff to get him involved early, especially on the road in Atlanta.
Yeah, and look, I think Doc has done a tremendous job this year coming in. It was very clear from the beginning that one of his goals was to raise Ben Simmons' confidence and just to tell Ben, I don't need you to be someone you're not, okay? We are done asking you to be a different, completely different player. I like the player you are, Doc has said, and he has shouted it from the rooftops and gotten Ben what I think is very well-deserved praise from around the league for all the things he does do. But there can be a comfort trap that you fall into in that case where you then feel, well, good, I'm good doing what I'm doing. I don't need to do anything else. And, of course, you guys know as better than anyone, you have to always push yourself, especially as the stakes get higher and the playoffs get tougher. And I think he will be asked to do a little bit more tomorrow. We'll see how he does there. All right, coming up, Rudy Gobert joined a very exclusive club by winning the Defensive Player of the Year award for the third time. We'll put this into historical context next. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Rudy Gobert reclaiming the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year award last night, becoming the fourth player to be named the league's top defender at least three times in his career. Chris, was Gobert your pick for the award?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, best defender on the best defensive team. They've been consistent all year. Hats off to Rudy Gobert. He deserves it.
Yeah.
He was my pick, too, and he's proved in game one of the Clippers series that this idea that he gets, quote, played off the court in the playoffs is mostly bogus. He looked tremendous in that series. And by the way, three Defensive Player of the Years, only four guys have done that, and they're all going to be in the Hall of Fame. And so we got to start having that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm going to just keep saying it. Ben Wallace, I'm so happy that the answer is yes at the end of this now. Rudy Gobert showed with that the play at the very end of game one exactly what his skill set is, and that is a little bit different than as he has been described by the people who don't believe in his game. He has been so much fun to watch, and I also think you can't understate the poise that he has showed. He put himself, frankly, in a very difficult position at the beginning of the NBA shutdown with everything going on, and he did everything right after that. And we talk all the time, People are going to make mistakes. They are going to screw up. It is what you do after that. And he did publicly to the community in Utah, to the team, reached out to Donovan Mitchell when there was some friction and some issues there. And I am really impressed with the way that core got back together. I saw them in the bubble. They had some very serious ping pong games between the two of them. And you can see it. You can see that relationship as strong as ever out on the court. All right, let's talk about, and I did vote for him as well. I think he's been excellent this year. Let's talk Jazz Clippers game tonight. After losing game one, the Clippers will look to even up the series. Zach, what needs to change for the Clippers tonight?
The two teams were playing at different speeds in the first quarter of the game. You could see how fresh the Jazz were compared to the Clippers, and we'll see how that fatigue holds up. But I think they can always be a little more purposeful in offense. The Clippers have a tendency to just kind of wander and not sort of be as predatory as they need to be against the weaker links on the other team. And I think the rotation, Ty Lue's rotation, will be interesting. They had a lot of Luke Kennard. Utah really hunted him. We didn't see Terrence Mann in the second half. So I think there are sort of little adjustments to be made here and there.
I think one of the challenges they're going to have to really succeed in is holding Donovan Mitchell under 40 points. They've been getting beat for 40 points quite often in these playoffs. Yep. They're going to try to have to figure that out. They're going to have to take that challenge. And they're going to have to get Paul George going. He's one of their best players, offensive players, if not in the league, you know, definitely on that team. And they're going to have to get him going. I look for him to have a better game. They'll get.
Chris, as a teammate, what would you do to help Paul George get going? What can we look for the other guys in the court to do for him tonight?
You know, just get him open, set screens for him, get him in motion. You know, you just don't want all ISO ball. You want to get Paul George in space. You want to get drive and kick situations for him and have him in situations where people just can't put their hands on him or he can attack. They'll be fine.
Well, I will say this, PG is in a much better place in this year's playoffs than last year, and I'm very curious to see how he responds. We'll see you guys back tomorrow.